Your spouse can make a great spouse. They make a terrible God. And you start depending on your spouse to make you happy, keep you happy. You've given them God's job description. Do not put that pressure on them.
Hi, everyone. I'm your host, Kurt Bruner, and welcome to the podcast. On this edition, we're going to hear from Pastor Steve Stroup. Now, Steve is the lead pastor of Lake Point Church in Rockwall, Texas. Now, over the years, Steve has been very intentional, not only about his own marriage, he's been married for 37, 38 years now, but also about investing in the marriages of his congregation. And one of the ways he's done that is to host a periodic workshop called Marriages That Last. I recently had the privilege of co-authoring a book with Steve, and in part one of the book, we talk about the fact that the home is the primary context of our spiritual formation, for better or for worse. And of course, marriage is the foundation of every home. So Steve wrote the section called Intentional Couples, where he talks about marriage. And many of the themes in the book are the same themes that he has presented over the years in his Marriages That Last workshop. So we can just imagine that we're slipping into the room as Steve is presenting to a group of couples who are eager to become intentional about their marriages. Now, we're not going to hear the whole conference. That would take a couple of hours. But we are going to spend about 25 to 30 minutes hearing some highlights. If you want to go deeper into what you hear from Steve, of course, you can read that section of our book, It Starts at Home, which is now available. But for now, here's Pastor Steve Stroup presenting Intentional Couples.
Here's what I hope for you today is that you can take home one concept or one tool or one insight that will help you take your marriage to the next level. No one conference or seminar is going to solve all your marital problems. But God bless you for being here today and for investing in your marriage to get a tool, to put something else in your toolbox. God bless you. You just turn to your spouse right now, even if you had to argue with them to get them here, would you just thank them for being here today and give them a big old sloppy kiss? Would you just do that right now? Okay, some of you, stop the kissing. We're doing that next hour. We're talking about that next hour. I want to peek early here. This is a session about communication. Guys, communication is so important. About 80% of our problems can be solved by communication because there's just a misunderstanding or there is a disagreement that can be navigated with communication. So if you can get better at communicating, oh my goodness. So we're going to talk about communication, but we're going to lead up to that by talking about the pillars of a strong relationship. The first pillar of a strong relationship is love. Now, I just want to stop right here and define love before we talk about communication in depth because a lot of people misunderstand love. Look at Philippians 2. The passage says, "Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, let each of you regard one another as more important than himself. Do not merely look out after your own personal interests, but also for the interest of others." Love is a decision. It is a decision to know and then to meet the needs of the person that you're having a relationship with. Love is a decision. The reason I want to say that is a lot of people think love is a feeling. I'll talk to a couple, they'll come in, they'll say, "We're thinking about getting a divorce." And I'll say, "Why?" And they say, "Well, we just don't love each other anymore." And what they're really saying is, "We don't feel the same about each other today as we did 7 years ago." But feeling is, the feelings that you have toward each other, they are a symptom of the greater problem. The problem is not that you lost your feelings. The problem is that you're treating each other in a way that's killing those feelings, creating toxic feelings. Love is not a feeling. Because see, if love is a feeling, we think it is. I mean, we talk about falling in love. Have you ever used that term? I saw him or I saw her and I just fell in love. It was love at first sight. And what we're saying is it's like we're walking down the street and we talk about falling in love. It's like we're walking down the street, we're not paying attention where we are, and there's a big hole in the ground. We fall in, okay? And we say, "Well, I can't get out, so I might as well get married." Now, if that's what love is, then if you can fall in love like that, accidentally you also fall out of love, like falling out of a tree. But love is not a feeling. Love is a choice. You really can choose to love somebody. And you look at somebody and you say, "You know what, I'm going to make a commitment with them that I'm not going to make with anybody else. And that commitment is to care as much about their needs as I care about my needs." It's not looking at somebody and they're pretty or they're handsome or they make me feel good while I'm around them. That's called selfishness. And when the person doesn't cooperate with your selfishness, you're out of love. No, you're still in selfishness. Now, everybody in this room suffers from the disease I just described to some extent, okay? So we all need to hear that. Love is a choice. It is a choice to say, okay, I'm going to commit myself to you for the rest of my life, and I'm going to attempt, we're never perfect, but I'm going to attempt to find out what your needs are and then to equally meet those needs as I'm attempting to meet my needs. Now, I said it was two things. First of all, to know what the other person's needs is and then to meet them. And the reason is you never know what the other person's needs are like you know your own needs. It takes effort. Well, you know, when I'm sitting in the living room and I get thirsty, I know it immediately. Marcia's sitting there, and Marcia may be as thirsty as I am. There's no way that I'd know that unless I make myself a student of my wife, unless I go on a safari to figure out what my wife needs. That means I've got to be asking questions all the time. That means I've got to be listening. I have to do some things to love my wife that I don't have to do to love myself. It's intuitive for me to love myself. And so it is a choice to, first of all, know my wife's needs, and then second of all, to meet those needs. That's what love is. And feelings can be affected by so many things. They can be affected by how much sleep you got last night. They can be affected by the pizza that you ate yesterday. They can be affected by the struggle you're having at work. They can be affected by how the other person treats you. But if you wait for feelings to act, you're going to find yourself in real trouble. What if you didn't go to work every time you didn't feel like it? What would happen? The short answer is you would lose your job. Okay? What happens when we don't love, when we don't feel like it? That's right. Same exact thing. You lose your marriage. And some of you are operating on that right now. If you feel something toward your mate, you treat them nice. If you feel something, you make a sacrifice. If you feel something, you have sex with them. But if the feelings aren't there, it ain't happening. And what's going to happen is you're going to lose your marriage because you're letting feelings, follow this, this is worth the whole trip today. You're letting feelings create your choices instead of letting your choices create good feelings. Think about Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. He makes a choice. These people need someone to die for their sins. I don't want to do it. I don't feel like doing it. God, if there's any way that I can love them without doing it, please show me. And then he chooses to go to the cross. That's love. Second thing is acceptance. Ephesians 4:32 says, "And be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving each other, just as Christ, God in Christ, has forgiven you." What we're talking about here is we're talking about the fact that if you're going to have a strong relationship, you not only have to have a commitment to love, but second of all, you also have to accept the fact that you married a sinner who's in process. Acceptance says, my mate is not going to be perfect, and my mate is not going to meet all of my needs. Now, here's what I believe as a Christian. I believe that God has promised me that he will meet all of my needs according to the riches of Christ Jesus. I know that he wants to meet some of those needs through my wife, Marcia. But I know that God didn't say, I'm going to meet your needs as long as Marcia cooperates with me. See, if I'm depending on Marcia to meet all my needs, then I cannot afford for her not to do that. And I've got to pressure her. I've got to manipulate her to change. I've got to change her because if she doesn't change, then I'm not going to be happy. If she doesn't change, my needs aren't going to be met. And so I start putting the pressure on her. But if I can accept the fact that there are going to be some of my needs that she's going to meet and there's some of them she's not going to meet because she's a sinful human being in process just like me, then what I can do is I can invite her to love me but not pressure her if she doesn't. I can accept her for being in process. Now, that doesn't mean we settle for less. I'm not talking about settling for less. I'm just talking about being realistic about what your spouse can provide for you. Let me tell you something about your spouse. Your spouse can make a great spouse. They make a terrible God. And you start depending on your spouse to make you happy, keep you happy. You've given them God's job description. Do not put that pressure on them. Let them be your spouse. I've been married for now 37 years. And there's still things that I've been telling Marcia about for all that time that she has not changed. And you know, there's a couple reasons she hasn't changed. One is that some of this stuff, I'm being unrealistic in my expectations, and she shouldn't change. If she let me have my way on everything, it would be bad for me. But there are some things that Marcia's not changing, and she should change. We're going to get to heaven. She's going to find out she was wrong. But that story can be told for me, too. Third pillar is communication. Every once in a while, ask your partner what's going on in their life. What are their needs that maybe you can help them with? The way I do it with Marcia is I say this, Marcia, will you tell me two or three things that I could do that to love you? I always say, I'm not saying I'm going to do them, but I'd like to know what they are. And I'm not trying to be funny there. I really do say that because I'm not giving my wife a carte blanche, because you remember there's half the things she's going to ask me for I should say no to. It would be bad for her for me to enable her selfishness. So I just say, are there two or three things that I could do to love you? And I'm not trying to create an argument here because I may not meet those needs, but would you tell me? You know, it's amazing. Marcia tells me how to love her. I remember years and years ago, the first time I did this. So she said, well, I don't have two or three. I just have one. I wish she hadn't said that. But that's exactly what she said. In other words, there was something that she felt like I was doing that wasn't loving her or that I wasn't doing, and she wanted to tell me. And it wasn't two or three things. It was one thing. And she said, when we're on a date, for you not to use a cell phone. Now, the thing I love to do more than anything else is multitask. It's part of, you know, my sickness of self-identity that I can exist here on this earth if I'm accomplishing a lot, okay? But we're out on a date, and I'm thinking I'm doing really good because I'm out on a date with my wife. But I'm like solving people's problems on the phone. I'm planning a sermon in my head. I'm, you know, mapping out tomorrow's agenda. I'm doing all these things. And guess what my wife's love language is? My wife's love language is undivided attention. Okay, so I'm thinking I'm doing wonderful and I'm earning points. I'm getting 0 points for every date. 0 points. Because I'm answering phone calls and I'm making phone calls on the way to the restaurant. And she says, I want you, when we're on our date night, to put the phone down, turn it off. And so I started turning off the cell phone during date night, and all of a sudden, date night changed. Okay? Now, guys, that's just information. Discovering needs. Some of you are not talking very much in your marriage right now, and the reason you're not talking very much is because every time you start talking, you get into an argument. Guys, let me encourage you to have some discussions where you're not solving a major problem in your marriage or talking about a major problem in your marriage. You're just talking. Because in those times, it can be a real positive time where you affirm the other person, you find out about what's going on in the other person's life. Don't let all of your conversations be about what's negative about your spouse. And you know why? Let's go back to it. You know why it goes there? Is because you're in desperation because you haven't accepted your spouse. You're still trying to perfect them. And by the way, they're trying to perfect you too. So what do you do with that anger? Well, the Bible says you need to communicate your anger, but it has to be clear and it has to be calm. He says clear to the pouters, because there's some of you in here who are pouters. And the way you deal with anger is you just hold it in. And the other person knows there's something wrong, but you don't tell them. In fact, they say to you, hey, hon, is something wrong? And you go, no! Which is your way of saying, of course there's something wrong, but I'm not about to tell you what it is. You have to guess. And by the way, I'm not going to tell you because you might apologize. And I'm not finished punishing you yet with my silence. Okay? We have any pouters in here? Raise your hand if you're a pouter. Come on. It's good for the soul to confess. Any pouters? Okay. All right. He says, you got to be clear. If you're angry, you have to say it. You have to tell. Your spouse is not a mind reader. You say, well, I told him 17 years ago that bothered me. Well, yeah, but you have to tell him every time it bothers you. No Morse code with the, you know, pots and pans in the kitchen. You have to actually use words and tell them why you're angry. But he says also it has to be calm. That's for the shouters. See, there are pouters, but there are also shouters. And shouters, you never have to worry about what they're angry at, because they will tell you either with loud volume or with great intensity. And by the way, I'm a shouter. That's my tendency when I'm communicating incorrectly. But I don't really raise my volume. I'm too subtle and smooth and sharp for that. What I do is I very calmly tell my wife in outline form how stupid she is so that she will not disagree with me the next time, you see? That's a shouter as well, okay? It's where I'm using words to attack somebody else to be a manipulator, okay? How many of you are shouters, by the way? Would you raise your hand? Okay, great. All right, good for the soul. How many of you are switch hitters? You can go either way. Would you raise your hand? All right, keep them up. These are talented people, okay? All right. Okay, we can't be a shouter, we can't be a pouter. Notice C is current. It has to be current. See, here's what, and especially those of you who are pouters, some of you who are pouters turn into shouters, because what happens is something makes you angry and you just push it down because you're not as verbal as the other person. You think you're going to lose the argument, so you're just not going to say anything. Or you say, well, I'm supposed to be a good Christian, I'm not supposed to complain, so I'm just going to push it down. And what happens is you push it down, and guys, those emotions don't go anywhere. They become toxic waste. And what happens, it's like pushing springs down. And then all of a sudden, some little thing happens and just... And here's what's weird about that. All these emotions come out at one time about one situation, and you don't even remember where all those emotions came from. You just know that you're as mad as hell, and you can't take it anymore. And the other person's like, whoa, where'd that come from? And you couldn't tell them if you want to, because you don't even remember where all those emotions are from, but they've all been there, and they've got to be released. Let me tell you something. If you don't release them, they'll make you sick. Doctors are telling us now that people have migraines, that people have cancer, people have heart problems because of repressed anger. So what are we to do? We're to let it out when it happens. And, you know, in small doses, we can handle it. We can remember what the anger is about so the other person can benefit from our anger. And by the way, guys, some of you are keeping a list. Some of you have been married 7 years, and you got a journal of 7 years of the sin of your spouse. If your spouse says, please forgive me, and you say, I forgive you, you got to let it go. You got to erase it. You got to tear that page out of your journal. Because the problem is you get all that anger built up. You can't resolve it because it's not about the one situation you're arguing about that day. It's about everything. And nobody can go back and undo all that. You've got to forgive that. You've got to let it go and deal with one thing at a time. Last thing is D, it's got to be constructive. Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word is good for edification according to the need of the moment, that it may give grace to those that hear. It's amazing to me what people argue about. Now, I'm going to give my opinion right here, and you don't have to take this as gospel because it's just my opinion. I think that whoever loads a dishwasher ought to load it like they want to load it. With the responsibility comes the authority to do it wrong. That's okay. Now, guys, I don't know about you, but it started with me about when I was about 2 years old. When I get caught doing something or I get accused of doing something, my first reaction is to lie, to avoid, to hide, to attack my wife, you know, kind of distract her, something that she did wrong. None of those are biblical responses. The biblical response is, you're right, I did it. I am sorry. When was the last time you did that? When was the last time your spouse told you that you sinned against them and even didn't communicate it well, didn't do the truth with love? They just blew you away with it. But you're guilty, you're guilty. And you said, you know what, you're right, I'm sorry. Will you please forgive me? It's amazing. It works. I'm grateful that I have a home where when I raise my hand and I say, I'm sorry, it was me, that my wife doesn't nail my hand to the wall. I'm glad that I have a God that when I own my own sins, when I say, yes, God, you're right, that's what I did and I'm sorry, he doesn't nail my hand to the wall. See, a hand's already been nailed to the wall. And if your home is a grace place, people confess their sins more often. And here's what your mind says. If I let them off on this, they'll just keep on saying they're sorry and keep on doing it. They might. They might. But here's what I believe. Love is a greater motivator than shame or guilt. And you cannot manipulate your spouse with threats or withholding things or with guilt, shame, lecture, anger. It doesn't work. Now, you've been doing that for several years. How's that working out? Let's try this grace thing. We're going to talk about satisfying sex. Now, guys, here's what's hilarious. Is all the people in our society that should not be talking about sex are talking about it, and the very people who should be talking about it aren't talking about it. Have you noticed that? Couples don't usually talk about sex unless somebody's mad because they're not getting enough. And that's a real bad time to be talking about it because, you know, people are angry and all. What I want to talk about is I want to talk about 3D sex. And you don't even have to wear those funny little glasses to get it. 3D sex. And when I say 3D, I'm talking about spiritual, emotional, and physical. And you need to enjoy sex at all three levels. First of all, you need to enjoy sex at the spiritual level, all right? The Bible says that you ought to have a spiritual intimacy. Now, I'm going to guarantee you that if you're not going to church on a regular basis, you're not having as good of sex as some of the rest of us in this room. Because you're not experiencing what I believe is the deepest intimacy that you can have, which is a spiritual intimacy. It means you go to church, you listen to spiritual truths, they become your values. On the way home from church, you talk about those values. You're both studying the Bible. You may not study the Bible together every day. I don't know that that's realistic. But at least once a week, you're telling each other what you're learning from the Bible. And there's a kind of intimacy that you have that you don't have with anybody else at the deepest level. It's called spiritual intimacy. Physical sex is an outward expression of an inward reality. And if you don't have a relationship, you don't have a whole lot to express. You can have an orgasm. An orgasm is great physically, but you're missing two dimensions of sex, which is an expression of intimacy on a spiritual and a soul level, emotional level. And if it's not there, it's pretty shallow. I'm not saying it's not enjoyable. I'm just saying it is pretty shallow, and it's certainly not 3D sex. So spiritual intercourse, first of all. Second of all, an emotional intercourse. Just give you some examples. One of the things that Marcia and I discovered is that we read different kinds of books. And one of the things that we did to kind of connect with each other is every year I pick at least one book that I know that I've read that I was interested in that I realized Marcia would be interested in that as well. And I give her that book to read. And every year she picks one of her books to give me to read, which means every year we read two books that we're reading the same book. And then we share ideas about that. Let me give you another example. Every once in a while, I think it's healthy for the wife to go and do the hobby of the husband with him. Not all the time, because it'll ruin his hobby for him, okay? You get to know what's going on in the other person's life. Also, I really believe this is huge, but experiment until you find a new hobby together. At least one thing that you enjoy together, whether it's looking for antiques or it's painting. And then the other thing is, put yourselves in situations where you actually have to talk to each other. Marcia and I, we try every night, but about three times in a week, if the weather allows and her schedule allows and my schedule allows, we go walking for about 2 miles. And it's a different experience, guys, than I have had doing anything else. It's different than date night. It's different than anything else. When we walk, what happens is there's not a telephone to answer. There's not a chore that's sitting right in front of us that needs to be done. There's nobody else with us. And we start about a mile into that 2 mile walk, we start talking about things that we would never talk about in terms of our dreams and our disappointments, in terms of our kids and our grandkids, in terms of the future, in terms of even conflict. If you don't have some kind of regular, I call it a catalytic system because it happens whether you think about it or not. It's a default for us. If you don't have a situation that forces you guys to talk, then you're in real, real trouble. Now, you want to just get basic, go to date night. I'm the biggest proponent of date night. Once a week, and it doesn't have to be expensive. It doesn't have to cost you anything. It could be, you know, going out to eat. It could be anything. But where you leave the house, you get away, just the two of you, not with I can't believe these people call date night when they're with three other couples. You know, that's good stuff, and I'm glad you got good Christian friends. But some of you are afraid to be alone together. If a typical month has 4 weeks, shoot for 4 date nights a month. But if you hit 2, consider it a success. And don't argue about who set the date or who picked the place. Just anybody step up to the plate, shoot for 4, hit 2. It really will change that second part of it, which is emotional intimacy. Physical sex is an outward expression of your spiritual intimacy and your emotional intimacy. And then the last part is physical sex, okay? I think most of us know this, but we don't take it into account when there's conflict related to sex. And so I'm going to just go through this. It may not fit your situation completely. This may be a good chart for you to go home and talk about because you may differ. This is as a general rule. This information came out of a survey of about 10,000 couples, and this is what they discovered. When it came to orientation, men are mostly physical in their orientation, whereas women are more relational. The husband is going to be more compartmentalized. The wife is going to be more holistic. Here's what I mean by that. Finances could be in the toilet. Things could be going on bad at work, but it doesn't affect the man's sex life. Now, that's not always true. On the other hand, for a woman, everything affects her sex life. There could be dishes in the sink, and she thinks they ought to be in the dishwasher, so she can't have sex. Husband's thinking, throw away the dishes. I'll buy you a new set. Okay? That's the difference there. Stimulation for guys, it's sight and light. It's for women, it's lights off. Okay? It's touch and darkness. For women, it's attitudes and actions and words. In other words, guys, what I'm saying is that she's probably not that turned on about you buying some silk boxer shorts and dancing around on top of the bed. Okay? What she's going to be turned on about is the fact that you ask her how her day went instead of flopping on the couch and turning on television. That she's going to be more stimulated by you saying, honey, I appreciate all the work you do around the house. I know it's real busy right now and things aren't perfect, but we got two preschoolers. I don't expect them to be perfect. That turns her on. And very frankly, ladies want their husbands to be romantic. And for you to keep on saying, well, I'm just not that way. That's not the kind of person I am. Well, then expect to get less then, okay? Because that's the person she is. And this is not just about you. Remember, love is to know her needs and meet her needs. Men typically need respect and admiration. Women need love. Men need to be physically needed. Women need to be emotionally needed. Now, let me stop right here. Guys, your wife wants you to turn the television off. Look her in the eyes and say, tell me what's going on with you. Tell me how I can pray for you. Tell me how I can love you. Sometimes a woman will start telling you about a movie she saw or a book she read, and you're thinking, oh my gosh, get to the point. But see, the problem is she's not trying to accomplish a task, which is to tell you about the show. She's using the show as an excuse to engage you because at least she's got your attention. And she's going to stretch that story out as long as she can just because she wants to be with you. It's about the relationship. See, for her, that's the highest priority. Gals, now let's switch the shoe there. Think about how you feel when your husband doesn't listen to you and doesn't engage with you and doesn't know what's going on in your life, doesn't talk with you. That's how he feels every time you say no to sex. Men need to be physically needed. Now, let me tell you a problem here. Men would like for their wives to be the aggressors sexually, and it's probably not going to happen very often, okay? But gals, you really give your husband a love gift when from time to time you are the aggressor, and it's not like I'm really interested in sex, but it's more of, hey, I know you're really interested in sex. And I want to give that to you as a love gift. Notice there for sexual response, it says quick excitement. For a male, you might want to write next to that microwave. I think that's a good metaphor. For a woman, it's slow excitement. You might want to write next to that crock pot. Now see, I think those are helpful metaphors. Microwave, crock pot. How does a crock pot work? When do you put the food in there that you're going to eat that night? When do you put it in there? In the morning! Guys, if you want to have sex, foreplay begins the moment you wake up that morning. Words, actions, attitudes. And the way that she warms up is the way you treat her all day long. Now, guys, that's just the way God made them. And you know what? I think he did this on purpose. God's got a great sense of humor. It makes us have to really be sensitive to our wives, to love our wives, to listen to our wives, to spend time with our wives, to be relational with our wives, to provide marital security, emotional security, for our wives. It forces us to get what God built into us to want for us to love our spouses. I think it's cool when you really think about it, if you cooperate. The dangers for men is to use sex as a way to escape or to substitute for intimacy. In other words, things are not going well in the marriage, but let's just have sex and then have separate lives. Or worse still, you step outside of your marriage and you have sex with someone else other than your spouse. And that's because you're not doing the tough work in your marriage to create a kind of oneness that allows you to have regular sex with your own spouse. And that's a real danger there. For women, the danger is to manipulate or to retaliate with sex. To manipulate him to get him to do the things you want him to do, or to punish him because he's not doing the things that you want to do. In a love relationship, giving a love gift, there are going to be times, ladies, when you're not interested in sex and you have sex with your husband because you love him. And men, there are going to be times when you want to have sex and you're going to let your wife say no without feeling guilty because you love her. Those are called love gifts. Guys, you're not going to have sex every night. And it ain't going to be great sex every time you have it. Get realistic about that. Real key is love, acceptance, and communication.
As I mentioned at the beginning, if you want to go deeper into any of the themes that you heard Steve touch on in these highlights, you can pick up the book, It Starts at Home. And I hope you'll do so to help you become intentional in your marriage. It also goes into what it means to be an intentional parent, an intentional grandparent, an intentional leader, all centered around this theme that spiritual formation starts at home, for better or worse. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.